These are the Target Files, taking a 21st century look back at the 20th century adventures of the Doctor in novelization and audiobook form, looking through the eyes of adulthood at our childhood memories. After all, a great Time Lord once said, "There's no point in being grown up if you can't be childish some of the time." Accused of crimes against the inviolate laws of evolution, the Doctor is on trial for his life. The sinister prosecutor, the Valiard, presents the High Council of Time Lords with the second piece of evidence against the Doctor. A dramatic adventure on the planet Thoros Beta, which led to the renegade Time Lord's summons to the Court of Inquiry. But as the Doctor watches the scenes on the Matrix, he is puzzled by what he sees. His behavior is not as he remembers. Only one thing is certain: on the evidence of the Matrix, the Doctor is surely guilty as charged. Hello and welcome to Doctor Who Target Files. This is Mike in Swansea.
And hello there, this is Alex in Exeter.
This time, up to episode 48 now, we will be discussing the sixth Doctor story, novelisation, Mind Warp, written by Philip Martin, based on his TV script for the Trial of a Time Lord season, and the audiobook read by Colin Baker. Al, your initial teaser thoughts on the second story in the Trial of a Time Lord season in novel form?
It's a very sort of interesting one because we have a lot of stuff taking place in two separate places. We have the planet stuff and we have the sort of stuff in the trials, joys of this season where they tried to cut down expenses by having the trial scenes all the time. It's an interesting one. It has lots going on. It has some great characters back. We get Sylv back from Vengeance of Varos. Some good acting. I think the other thing is it's not a bad out of the four. I think it's one of the better ones, I think.
Yes, a very interesting cast. It's been interesting to read online how fans have felt about this whole season and this story in particular down through the 31 years since it was first broadcast. And the novelisation was published 3 years after TV broadcast on the 15th of June 1989 in the UK. Yes, a lot of fans, there was a particular thread on Gallifrey Base I noticed just last night saying that the header for the thread was stories that started off badly but ended really well, and Mind Warp was seen as one of those. An interesting take on it, I think. I can't really remember if it is one of my favourites from the whole of the trial season, not having seen the all four stories together for quite some time. But I think at the time, you know, I was 9 years old, there's a pretty dramatic end for Perry, although that's been updated in this novelisation version. And yes, very interesting one to look at, Al. What did you make of the fate, shall we say, of Perry Brown?
It's a certainly interesting one with having both different angles. You've got the TV episodes where, you know, she does die and it's left on that cliffhanger. explain later in the trial episodes, he's explaining what does happen to her, which I think over the book works better. I think that cliffhanger is sort of semi-explained at the end of the book with the last chapter, where you get this not sort of very realistic answer, and I think it works better in the episode. And I think, you know, Perry's character goes on quite a bit of a journey for this, and I agree, between the one we did before the trial and this one, I think it is a lot better, I think.
Yes, definitely improves as it goes on. As you said, a great supporting cast. The return of Syl from Vengeance on Varos, also a Philip Martin story written in the previous season and novelised by Philip Martin himself once more. We get him and the associate Kiv, played by the great Christopher Ryan from The Young Ones, who also appeared in the new series, Sontaran Stratagem episodes, as a Sontaran. What did you make of his performance, Al, of Kiv, and the way that character is written and portrayed in the audiobook and the novelisation?
Slightly not as silky but nastier version than Syl, and he's very interested in making money and, you know, finding a body to get back into, you know, because his body's dying. That's the whole point of being here. But yeah, I think the performance is excellent. I think it's very sort of shout, very typical nasty character, what he does brilliantly. The version that Colin does on the audiobook is not far off, so I think it's a really good performance all round, really.
One of the main characters, of course, as well, King Akarnos, the great Brian Blessed. How do you feel his performance comes across through Colin reading it in the audiobook and Brian's own appearance on screen famously in this 1986 story?
Oh, I just think it's brilliant. Brian Blessed's brilliant, whatever he does. And he's just, you know, you need your earplugs with this DVD, because I had it on mod and it still was quite loud. And I love it how they put in jokes about, you know, at the end of one of the episodes where Brian Blessed's character is still shouting. They go, "Oh, you're too loud. You need to speak quieter." And I think Colin does a really good impersonation of Brian throughout the audiobook. So I think it's really good.
Yes, and in one of the later episodes, I think it may be the final episode 4, story goes that the Doctor has been overtaken by this sort of brain transplant earlier on in the story, and he has to pretend that he's still working for Syl and for Kiv. And they sort of do a major double cross, don't they? And Akarnos comes around the back of, I think it's Kiv at the time, it may be another character, Al, and says, I'm going to grab you by the throat. And then the character, I think it's Kiv, says, "Oh, thank you, thank you." He says, "It's a pleasure." "Oh, no, no, not for letting me go. Thank you for not shouting."
Yeah, I think it is in the sort of, I think it's the penultimate episode on the DVD, and it's just hilarious. All these little things, I think they probably added it because it's Brian playing it, you know, just the whole thing. We know what, you know, Brian Blessed actually did it recently. He actually breaks the sound barrier if he does one of his long roars, apparently.
Yes, and he puts these sort of strange, very strange little ticks in the TV version, doesn't he? These little rasps and these little whistles that help to make up his character. I found those quite strange and sometimes quite jarring, but I think Philip Martin has scaled those back, really, in the novelisation form and subsequently Colin as well in the audio performance. Thankfully, I'd say.
Yeah, I would agree, because they're quite weird. Well, I don't understand why he's making those sort of little noises. You know, either he's in shouty mode or making those little noises. So I think Colin taking those out is a good thing, like you. I think it works better.
Yes, I did wonder if it was his own way of sort of differentiating this character from a character he played in the Flash Gordon movie.
Oh, yeah, it is pretty similar to that. Maybe that's why he did it, because it is a pretty similar... Well, Brian Blessed's character is normally pretty similar. It's very shouty.
Yes, and a fantastic commentary on the DVD with Colin Baker, Nicola Bryant and Philip Martin. And Colin recounts a great story about the old union rules where you had to pack up at 10 o'clock at night, otherwise the work and the unions would immediately go into overtime pay. And apparently one certain line Brian Blessed just simply could not get right, and they ended up going over by literally a few seconds. And Colin says, "Oh well, you see, Brian got away with that. If it had been me responsible for cocking up a line, I would have had it right in the neck, but you know, that's just the power of Mr. Blessed all along."
Oh, totally. You don't want to mess with Mr. Blessed. He would have told you where to go quite. I know, if we've heard the story, I'll give the polite version of where daughter was panicking about her wedding, and he goes, "Please don't swear, Dad." And he went on stage, and basically it was cut the air, the blueness, wasn't it? So you don't mess with Blessed.
Oh, is that recorded anywhere? Was that back in the days before major recording at weddings and things?
It must have been. It was at his daughter's wedding. Remember, I think he's told the story. He told it now. Terry Malloy told it, didn't he, at Regen, that story about how he went to the wedding and promised not to swear, and it was just complete. He mucked the story up by a second. It was just a swearing fit, apparently, afterwards.
Oh, brilliant. Anyway, Al, back to, I think it's Mind Warp we're doing, isn't it? We've digressed a bit. Yeah, it starts off with a trial scene again within this Trial of a Time Lord season. Up against the Michael Jason Valliard. I love the way Colin plays the pomposity, both in the way it's written in the novelisation and the performance of the audiobook and the TV version, when Michael Jason refers to Linda Bellingham's Inquisitor as sagacity, and Colin gives this sort of totally aloof shock horror, "Sagacity?" You know, almost as if Michael Jason's Valliard is really sort of crawling to the person who's ultimately going to decide the fate in this trial.
Yeah, I really like that as well. It looks like for the whole episode, you know, when you're in the trial bit, like Colin doesn't know, like his doctor knows what's going to happen next, fighting on his feet most of the time. I do like those bits.
Yes, he comes across as very slimy, the Valliard, doesn't he? But counterbalanced against that, is Colin's sort of pomposity in the role. Sometimes, perhaps that didn't come across very well at the time on TV. Do you think he overplayed that pompous nature of his doctor at times?
Yeah, I think there was that whole thing of, unfortunately, when this was being aired, that the whole problem, and it was the doctor trying to be something. I think the problem is with Colin, I love his doctor, and I think it's got better over years. He's trying to be something completely different to Peter Davison's doctor, and it sometimes doesn't work, I think.
Yes, and Philip Martin's added a few little flourishes to this novelisation. At the beginning, in the text, which we don't see in the TV version, is the doctor trying to recall some of the events which are about to unfold. And Martin got the notes here from the CD audiobook release cover. Philip Martin gives the Gallifreyan records keeper a name called Zon. Did you like his ideas of adding these minor elements to the story?
Yeah, I did actually, because I think it made more sense, because it went in the sort of TV DVD, it sort of cuts straight back to the trial and you don't know what's happened. Where were these little, you know, little bits beforehand? It gives you a little bit of time to work out what's happened from the last story, because, you know, all these four stories connect, and dropping in, you know, without reading the one we did before, then you're going to be a bit lost, and that extra bit helps, I think.
Yes, and listening to the commentary again, I'm not sure it comes across brilliantly clearly, because Colin admits on that commentary that he didn't understand the context at the time. There was a bit of a lack of communication between Eric Saward, script editor, and Philip Martin, the writer of his story. But we all know there's a bit of a issue between Colin and Eric Saward going back a bit anyway. But what they say on the commentary is Philip Martin intended the doctor, after he's had some sort of operation, because Akarnos was the last person to undergo the procedure, the doctor actually takes on characteristics of Akarnos, and that's why he's quite sort of aggressive at the time. But I certainly did feel that wasn't made too clear in the TV version, Al, but certainly more clear in the novelisation.
Yeah, I would agree. I watched all the four episodes, and that bit where he goes quite dark, the doctor, I couldn't really work out why he'd gone dark. And then in the book, it made a bit more sense, but it's still a little bit flabby, I thought. I couldn't quite get why it happened to him, but I think the bits where Colin goes into Dark Doctor are really good, personally.
Yes, there's a lot of malevolence, isn't there, and the way he sort of turns on a sixpence, and you think he's back with Perry, and then he's looks at setting her up again for the big fall.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think the Sixth Doctor works more interesting. He's definitely more interesting when he's in that sort of nastier sense, and I think there was, at the time, feelings what he was going to play that more like that, and it didn't seem to come off very well, I don't think.
Yes, because that's certainly what put me off him a bit, you know, only being 8 years old in the first season, where he tries to strangle Perry in the post-regen haze in the Twin Dilemma.
I think that's what I used to like most about Colin, the fact that his whole doctor was completely all over the place, and that, you know, from the Twin Dilemma onwards, so it slightly got fixed by the end of the, you know, the Twin Dilemma. It was still the chances of being there, I thought.
On to some more characters. How did you find the idea of Crozier, person behind these large-scale, horrific body horror operations?
Well, he's quite a nasty doctor, or do anything he wants to get where he wants to be, I think. And I do like that twist at the end, that, you know, we can't be saying it was spoiler, but, you know, the Time Lords are sort of semi-controlling them, basically. But it's like, I think he comes over very well. He's got a very malevolence, you know, he's very much like the Sylve camp, I think.
Yeah, so are there any themes this reminded you of, in particular the body horror? What sort of other stories can you perhaps recommend, Al, where you have the idea of brain transplants and traces of various things, a very sort of Mary Shelley, Frankenstein way of looking at the world?
Look, there's lots of things that have been done over the years. If we look at different things, I'd recommend anything by William Gibson, sort of cyberpunk, things like Neuromancer and things like that. Or there's a very good thing which has started, which is based on any of the Philip K. Dick's short stories called Electric Dreams. I think that started last Sunday on Channel 4. It's a little short stories that deal with lots of different elements of body horror. But if we're going back, great films, you have things like The Thing and, you know, The Fly and all sorts of things, and it's been there for years, because you have things like Dracula and Mary Shelley and the whole thing of electrifying, but, you know, it's all been there since the late 1800s, really.
Yeah, and the idea that the brain sort of rejects it and brings out these violent behaviours, even though, you know, we mentioned about Philip Martin making the case more explicitly in the commentary on the DVD that the Doctor has these violent tendencies because there are traces of Akarnos having the procedure just before him.
Well, yeah, I think that does come over once you read the book and understand the, you know, the backstory, thanks to Philip Martin. But I don't know if that came over very well in the episode. But I think this whole thing of violence is the whole bit there since, you know, regeneration from Peter Dozen and the Colin Baker. You know, there's always been that he might flip at any moment. I really like that about Colin's performance.
Yes, you know, perhaps elements of Peter Capaldi, possibly with the anger. Have you seen it more constrained, or is it difficult to look at these two eras, you know, 30 years apart?
Not really, because I think there are elements with the anger of different bits of the last season of Peter Capaldi, so the whole way he didn't want to regen again, in case he became more like anger. And I think that's been seen in the last episode of the last season. And the whole fact he's juggling now, the whole of what he is as a Time Lord, you know, the whole I'm just a man who helps, basically, that whole thing is definitely there in Collins, I reckon.
This is Alex Gibbons' Doctor Who News Round.
Hello there, this is Alex, and this is Who's News on the 20th of September. Well, first thing we need to mention is that Tom Baker has been back in the studio with Lara Ward for voicing the new animation of Sharda. We also have the synopsis for the Christmas Doctor Who, Twice Upon a Time. Spoiler coming up as Mike's about to read it out, so if you don't want to listen, listen away for a few seconds.
Two doctors stranded in a forbidding snowscape, refusing to face regeneration, and a British Army captain seemingly destined to die in the First World War, but taken from the trenches to play his part in the Doctor's story. This is the magical last chapter in the 12th Doctor's epic adventure. He must face his past to decide his future, and the Doctor will realise the resilience of humanity, discovering hope in his darkest frozen moment. It's the end of an era, but the Doctor's journey is only just beginning.
BigFinish.com news. First thing to mention is that Big Finish are going to be doing First Doctor box sets. This will be involving David Bradley as the First Doctor. From his great performance from the Christmas episode, we'll see him reprise the First Doctor, plus the actors who played his assistants in the great biopic that Mark Gatiss did a few years back. An Adventure in Space and Time, with James Draper's playing the first regeneration of the Master. It should be very interesting. Benny Summerfield fans will be happy that today new Benny box set is now available from bigfinish.com. It is Benny Summerfield, New Adventures, Volume 4, The Unbound Universe, Ruler of the Universe.
Back to Mind Warp novelisation, Al. The cover is an Alistair Pearson one. Just looking at the notes here on the CD release, which has a slightly altered cover. Yes, a little bit of information. The cover featured an illustration by artist Alistair Pearson, showing a collage of the creature Syl, along with Kiv and another mentor in the sky above the TARDIS, all against the background of the pink sea of Thoros Beta. Yes, very striking. Unfortunately, again in that period of not having the Doctors on the cover, for whatever reason, we're not sure. Pretty striking. Syl's a very memorable character, and you get an idea of his sort of pantomime menace from a wonderful expression he has on his face. A look of sheer surprise and glee, really. So it's definitely one I'd look at, and they have altered it. It looks more of a photoshopped effort on the CD version. I don't really prefer it. It's just a photorealistic image this time of Syl and Kiv next to each other, both looking sterner-faced on the camera. Above the TARDIS sat on the pink sea again, so Alistair's effort far superior on the novelisation for me, I think.
Yeah, that sounds better on the novelisation to the audiobook. It's joys of photoshoots obviously made it a bit more glossier, I suppose.
Yes, I think so, mate. I'd definitely agree with that. And speaking of that wonderful pink sea, they really pushed the boat out in these trial episodes in terms of effects, didn't they? You had the lovely paint box, computer generated imagery at the time, and I thought that really stood up well on the DVD release.
Yeah, it does. They really did. I think because they want this to be a really special series, I think it does look stunning. And I think the music's also really good in the episodes. It has that really good effects and that. So yeah, I think there is more definite effort with the sort of trial to make it something people remember, I think.
Yes, and audiobook wise, Colin's performance and the soundscape, I thought, pretty well balanced. Colin reads it with a great deal of enthusiasm. What did you make of his voices of all the characters?
I really enjoyed Colin's reading. I had normal Perry problem, but otherwise, I think it's very good. I thought his Brian Bressett was really, really good, and other characters came over with a good bit of menace with the Sylv character as well.
Trying to get that lovely Sylv voice.
That bit, yeah.
And I thought his Michael Jason Vailyard was very good as well. Played him with a slight sort of Cockney accent, even though we know Michael himself, having met him at Regenerations, is from the Midlands.
Yeah, it does seem to come over with a good bit of menace and punch, the Vailyard, with Colin doing. He's obviously very good friends with Michael Jason, and he sort of does it very well, I think.
Yes, and did you find the music and sound effects at all intrusive? I thought they blended pretty well with the audiobook.
Yeah, I think they were just about the right balance with the, you know, they weren't in your face, but when they were needed, you know, like the phasers and the sort of adding a bit of tension, I think it worked very well.
Yes, so novelisation, well, just looking overall, Al, did the novelisation audiobook keep your interest throughout?
Yeah, I think it builds nicely, but I think, you know, like I feel with the TV episodes, it could have done with a bit of editing in some bits, but otherwise I think it has good pace and it has very sort of nasty sort of characters, and I like the sort of change of the Doctor's, you know, what he's doing and his perception of being coming evil. I think that's great.
Do you think perhaps there could have been a few more lengthy moments of moralising in this story up amongst the whole idea of the body horror? Or do you think they cut that back well and kept the pace going? I think I'm sort of moving towards that feeling myself.
I feel that the whole, you know, why are we doing this sort of mind robbing and the whole body horror thing could have been explained perhaps a bit more in detail and gone into a bit more. Like, I think it's a bit more well done in the book, but it's the whole we can't be violent, it's the Mary Whitehouse era on TV. So it was sort of always worrying you're going to get this from Mary Whitehouse at that time period, I reckon. So it sort of kept it quite tame in some points.
Yes, I think far more terrifying in the TV version. You know, Perry with the hugely deep voice, don't we? A sort of Vaseline like haze on the camera. They used to get the effect from putting Vaseline on the camera lens, I think, didn't they? And the speech is totally slowed down as we see Akanos going pretty crazy with a gun in the operating theatre.
Oh, definitely. Those sort of nice sort of stunts, you know, are really quite shocking. And the whole, you know, whole bits were, you know, Perry had her hair shaved, and that was quite, for that time period, was quite important. I remember Nicola on the commentary saying how, you know, sort of representing women and that at the time, that was quite important, I think.
Yes, Al. And the ending-wise, had you jumped ahead at all to remember that the Doctor is, of course, taken out of time to go and attend his trial on Thoros Beta at this point, and we find out later in the season the Time Lords managed to get Akanos and Perry out of the situation shortly before. Were you happy with that resolution? I know Nicola Bryant wasn't, because we actually get the clip on the DVD of Mind Warp on the trial box set, where she sees that scene for the first time and she doesn't sound too pleased with it. I think she preferred the fact that Perry was such a popular companion and had died in the end, something we've also seen, you know, with Clara and Bill in the new series in terms of getting out of dreadful situations with the old escape clause.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the way that sort of, you know, the escape clause thing. I think it worked much better when you just thought Perry was dead. Well, we know, because we know later in the trial of the time, well, that's all explained. But like you, I think, you know, Nicola hadn't seen that for ages and watched it with the comments. He wasn't happy at all by the sound of it.
No, and how do you feel this all fits in with the Sixth Doctor era? Stood alone, sadly, only two series on the television.
I think I wasn't a big fan to begin with. I've been watching the whole four sort of DVD box set, and I think it actually works rather well. You know, the whole fact they wanted to, you know, make it a bit more there are a lot of special effects, and that probably cost a lot at the time. You know, it was a bit cheap having it in a trial setting, so you didn't need as much. And I think it works very well in the whole, you know, not having enough time to let Colin's Doctor breathe, which has happened now with Big Finish. You know, his Doctor is fantastic now. But I really do actually quite like the Trial of the Time Lord series now.
I do as well, Al. I think it's far superior to the first McCoy run. I think Sylvester's run does improve dramatically in Season 25 and Season 26, but this knocks it with a cock hat, really. I think Trial of a Time Lord knocks the subsequent season, starting with the time with the Rani.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that first season of Silves takes a lot time to get going until we get the really good stuff, and unfortunately got cut as well. I think the problem was, you know, there's so much other stuff going on in the back doors of BBC, where they really didn't want Doctor Who, and it's very ironic now when it's a flagship of the BBC again. I think time periods change.
Yes, Al, and moving on to Doctor Who news, are you enthused about, you know, the synopsis we've had, the fact we've got some very good Target releases coming soon? We're going to be doing a Peter Davison story next, and then at the beginning of October we will see Genesis of the Daleks released, read by John Coleshaw. A great list of Target audiobooks being released up to Christmas. We have the Five Doctors, I think, in November, and we have the Tenth Planet in time for scenes from that story in the Christmas special in December. And next year we have Robots of Death, Louise Jameson being announced as reading that, and later in the year we'll have another Colin story, Mark of the Rani.
Yeah, I think there's lots of stuff to look forward to. You know, there's lots of these books that haven't been out before as audiobooks are going to be fantastically read by, you know, people like Nicola doing Mark of the Rani, and Louise is great doing her stuff. She went to read something. It's just going to be really good, I think. And then getting, you know, the Tenth Planet properly read by Annika, I think, is going to be reading that, isn't she? And I think it will just be great having that connected to the very sad Christmas episode. I think, you know, it's going to be a bit of a weepy Christmas episode, I think.
Yes, rumoured filming to start for Series 11 in November.
So if that's going to be filmed in November, how long can they keep the companion under wraps?
It's going to have to be announced soon, Al, I think, isn't it? So probably looking for an autumn start next year. We don't know how many episodes yet, Al. We don't know what format. There's been speculation only online, folks, about everything building up as one story over a number of weeks. It could only be 10 episodes. It may move to Sunday nights. Who knows at the moment? Who knows, eh?
With me, I personally hope what I've seen is I want them to be hour episodes with a complete, like, you know, in the Russell T Davies, where there was a point, you know, what takes it to the 13th episode, and I want it on Wednesday. I think I've been looking at the schedule, and I think the day what would suit Doctor Who best is maybe a Wednesday, or if not, a Sunday, maybe, as we're saying, as the rumour, it might be on Sunday.
Would you say Wednesday, Al? I just got hints then of it being up against, you know, a Coronation Street or something, because that happened in the McCoy era.
I don't know. Wednesday is sort of a day when there's sort of not a great deal on these days. You know, you sort of Cookery or Doc Martin, I think, is on at the moment, just to give an idea of Wednesday. I mean, it's sort of, I definitely think it's going to be an hour, of what everybody's saying. They're going to be hour episodes, I think.
Would you say it would cut to 10 then, or perhaps 8, just for over an hour?
Well, it depends, because, you know, the big things on Netflix still do, you know, 13 episodes for an hour, and they're always an hour each, so you never know.
Ah, yes, but I was just wondering about BBC America, Al, because...
apparently, with advert breaks, I suppose.
Yes, yeah. 45 minutes fits the hour slot perfectly in terms of advert breaks, so perhaps not, you know, but Chris Chibnall has his ideas, and we are all very eager to hear them.
Definitely. I think we are in still very interesting times, and it's this whole, the companion can't stay quiet for much longer if they're going to start filming sort of mid-November.
Back in, Al, should we give scores overall for the TV version, the novelisation by Phil Martin, and the audiobook performed by Colin Baker of Mind Warp?
I think it's a very good all-rounder. I liked the DVD, and I like the audiobook, and I think the book's good. The only thing I'd say against the book and audiobook is having that alternative ending, which slightly annoyed me. But otherwise, I really like it. I think the performances in the DVD are excellent, from people like, you know, Brian Blessed and Colin Baker, Michael Jason, and Linda Bellarmine. They're all really good. So I'd probably give the DVD an 8, and the book probably a 7, and because of Colin's rather good performance, probably an 8 for the audiobook.
Possibly I just prefer the TV version. I think well edited, I'd give the TV version probably a solid 8, and I think the novelisation and the audiobook together both a 7.5. So another enjoyable one. Looking forward to some more Colin stories. We've covered both the Philip Martin stories now. He also novelised Mission to Magnus for Target a few years after this, and that was planned to be a season when the show went on hiatus. That was planned to be a story in that forgotten season, but I think Big Finish did a version, didn't they, a few years ago? And
I was just about to say that Big Finish have done that as one of their Lost Stories reigns with Colin and Nicola.
And Nabil Shaban is back.
So I forget, the lovely Silv is there.
So shall we say a big time, Al, goodbye? Next time, Doctor Who Target Files will be discussing Castrovalva, written by Christopher H. Bidmead, along with the audiobook performed by Peter Davison. Contact Doctor Who Target Files on Twitter at DW Target Files handle, or search Facebook for the Doctor Who Target Files podcast page and leave us a message. Thanks for listening. Doctor Who Target Files. Mind Warp Review featured Michael Winks and Alexander Gibbons. The Mysterious Planet music, composed originally by Dominic Glynn. 12th Doctor theme, composed originally by Murray Gold. Version for the podcast by Vale Mystery. Please do check out their channel on YouTube, VAYLE Mystery. Newsround opening and closing themes, composed originally by Ted Heath and his orchestra, and by John Baker. Doctor Who Target Files Mind Warp Review was recorded in Swansea, Wales, and Exeter, Devon, England, during September 2017.